You're listening to The Lyric Feature on RTE Lyric FM.
Good evening and welcome to The Lyric Feature. A little over 50 years ago, when Jane O'Leary moved to Ireland from the United States, women composers were practically unheard of here. Jane set about changing that, and over the years, she has played a central role in contemporary classical music in Ireland, and particularly in the west of Ireland, where she settled. In this evening's Lyric Feature, along with some of the musicians she has worked with over the years, Jane tells us about her life in music. This is The Musician That Is Me.
When I'm writing, I always think of the instrument I'm writing for, and the piano is my instrument. So first of all, I find the sounds I want on my piano, and I'm looking for unusual ways of resonating the strings, for example, muting them. If we put a finger at the tip of the string, we get a sound which is more like striking a drum almost. And if I stand up and open up the piano, I can get lots more sounds.
I think Jane O'Leary is one of the most important composers working in Ireland today.
We don't understand how lucky we are to be able to ask questions directly to the composer. That is amazing.
I'm running my finger, the flesh of my finger, across the strings and holding the pedal down. So at this point, everything resonates, but it sounds quite different from if I were playing the notes on the keys of the piano in the normal way. I can also do it with the back of my nail.
Well, I think Jane has been absolutely vital to music in Ireland, all music in Ireland. She's a formidable woman.
I can't think of anybody more important in contemporary music in Ireland.
I like to describe myself as a musician. I never describe myself as a composer, a pianist, a performer, a teacher. I'm all those things, but I think they all work together and make the musician that is me. Well, I'm from a small town in Connecticut. It's a suburb of Hartford. And if you know the American geography, it's part of New England. Well, I wasn't from what's called a musical family. Neither of my parents were musicians. But there was an interest in music. And my father sang in a choir. He sang in a male voices choir, which was lovely. Sound. I remember the sound of that choir.
There's a song that will linger forever in our ears. Oh, hard times come again no more. 'Tis the song, the sigh of the weary.
He also had an LP collection and would play operas and Beethoven symphonies and things like that on the record player. My mother was a visual artist, a painter. She had been an art teacher, but the war intervened and she got married, and that was kind of the end of her professional career. But she did pursue an interesting, quiet career. She carved birds out of balsa wood. She painted them with watercolor and they looked real. She would mount them on pieces of driftwood and create these sculptural objects. She inspired me very much, not only with the wonderful paintings that were on the wall and her sensitivity to moments of visual beauty, that she would stop and say, ah, look at that, you know. And I was very conscious of observing and noticing beautiful things in the sky, in the world around us. We had an upright piano in the house, as most people did, I think, in those years. And my sister was 5 years older than me. I have only one sister, and she was learning piano. And I just remember being fascinated watching her struggling to try to play the piano. She wasn't that fond of it, but I loved the idea of playing the piano, and I begged for piano lessons. And of course, they said I was too young. And yeah, that's my memory of insisting that I would go to these lessons like she was having. So I did. So that's where it started, at the piano. I chose to go to a liberal arts college, and I went to Vassar College. Really what won me over to select that as my favourite place to go was the fact that they had over 80 Steinway pianos on the campus. And I spent all my days in the music building, as happy as I could be, playing the piano and going to music classes, in addition to the other courses that I was taking. But it was wonderful. It was a very full and rich musical training. English was my minor subject, and languages, of course. My piano teacher was Earl Groves, a very nice man, a wonderful piano player, but he'd obviously chosen teaching as his career, and he introduced me to a whole new way of playing the piano. I had learned the notes, I could read music, I could play anything, but I didn't really have a technique, and using my whole body, relaxing my shoulders, thinking about my hands and the position of the hands, all these kind of things, that was a whole revelation to me. I just wanted to be better at playing the piano. I knew I was okay, but I wanted to be better, and I did achieve a pretty good level of skill. I I was listening to a recording of my senior recital the other day, and I was doing the Schumann Carnival, amongst other things, and I listened and I thought, that couldn't have been me. Just looking through some old papers here, and amazingly, I find this program from March 3rd, 1965, 8:30 o'clock, it says, at the recital hall at Vassar College. And it was a recital of compositions for solo piano by Aaron Copland. And I remember it vividly because I was so amazed and fascinated by this music, which was new at the time. I mean, these pieces were new. They weren't that old anyway. Looking back on it, it seems Aaron Copland, oh, that was a long time ago. Well, I suppose it was, but I was a student and being introduced to new music, and I have this program with his autograph on it, and I was very excited to meet him, shake his hand, and ask him for an autograph. I was very bold. So we have the program with the variations, the sonata, and the fantasy. My early introductions to new music, or well, contemporary, I suppose, of the era were Stravinsky and Copland and Hindemith. Those are the pieces I remember being introduced to in my piano studies and thinking, oh, these are very difficult and these are very strange. And they were completely different. We were introduced to composition as a study at Vassar in my final couple of years. It was quite a revelation to me because it wasn't something I had thought about before. The teacher was Richard Wilson. He said, right, just see what comes out and start putting something down on paper that represents what you are hearing. We had a small class. Of course, we all came up with completely different ideas, but he guided us in a way that left us free to explore our own emotions and feelings. Our fellow students would perform, and I vividly remember the thrill of hearing my music coming back where it was a public performance. And here was something I had created becoming real. It was astonishing. Anyway, I was hooked on composition from then on. When I finished college, I felt that I needed to pursue some graduate studies in music, and I was accepted into Princeton to study music theory. And of course, when I got there and started my courses, I discovered that there were some amazing composers there, lots of amazing composers, and I got the idea that I would change my course of study from focusing on theory to focusing on composition. Princeton was significant in my life for other reasons too. And while I was there, I met Pat O'Leary, who became my husband. And he was on a Fulbright scholarship from Ireland and was there for the same 4 years that I was there doing his PhD in applied mathematics. I came to Ireland with him in 1972. And have been here ever since, happily. It wasn't easy coming to Ireland and trying to work in the music field, and I felt that there were a number of problems for me living in Galway, because everything seemed to happen in Dublin. I was a foreigner and viewed with a little bit of suspicion, to be honest, and I was a woman. In terms of contemporary music, there were really only a handful of composers, and there was the Festival of 20th Century Music, which took place only every second year. And I think public interest was very limited. So it was tough trying to be a composer, trying to find opportunities to meet performers and audiences. But slowly, slowly, I kept going with it. I got the idea of creating a contemporary music ensemble in Ireland, a group which would play new music and give audiences the chance to hear what was going on, not just in Ireland, but in the world.
Jane rang me one day. She got my number, I think, from the Music Association of Ireland at the time. And she rang me to know would I be interested in coming for a rehearsal, that she was setting up a contemporary music group. So she rang me, and the one thing struck me, she said, we could meet at 2:30. I said, 2:30, and she went, what? So I knew she was American. I'm Madeleine Staunton, and I've been the flute player in Concord since 1976, when it was founded by Jane O'Leary.
We decided to call the group Concord, with an E at the end, because in 1976, it was also the year when the supersonic plane Concord took flight for the first time. And so we thought it was obviously a nice sounding name, Concord, as opposed to Discord. But it was a symbol of the modern world. And it said, yes, we are modern.
Concord was the first contemporary group that specialised in contemporary music. In fact, Jane applied for funding, and when she went to the meeting, she was asked, could you not include Schubert? So eventually she made it clear what Concord was about, that there were plenty of groups playing Schubert or whatever, and Concord was specialising in contemporary music. There were about eight of us at the start, and we had flute, violin, oboe, cello, clarinet, piano, voice, and whatever. We interchanged then with different instruments.
In September 1976, we had our first concert, and it was in the American Embassy. They offered to give us the space.
And we did a very ambitious programme. I think we hadn't realised that all the contemporary music didn't have to be so difficult. Like one of the pieces I remember rehearsing or practising at home for 6 months beforehand. But then I wasn't used to playing contemporary music, so at the time it was difficult. But with Jane's help, it became more fluent. And that concert in the American Embassy was a great success. We were delighted with it. Jane was particularly, she had organised everything. You know, she was the manager, she was the piano player, she was the composer, she was the librarian, she was everything. We did Hugh Lane concerts in the Hugh Lane Gallery on Sundays at noon, which developed into huge audiences. We did then lots of tours across Europe and even the States. And we did lots of touring around Ireland. So it was huge, a huge contribution to contemporary music. And for me personally, it opened a door to contemporary music that has been so exciting, and it has been a joy and a journey.
I had really been doing a lot of orchestral playing and some chamber music and not a whole lot of contemporary chamber music. And being introduced to this, I think it's a whole other world, really, to be honest with you, was kind of exotic and exciting, actually. I'm Paul Rowe, clarinet, bass clarinet. I've been playing with Concord for 30 years. Jane wrote A Piacere for me in 2005. She wrote A Piacere for me at my request because I was doing some research on collaboration. I have a particular memory of being in Paris, in the cultural center in Paris, with Jane, and Jane had some sketches, and I was playing some of the sketches, and we were, in a sense, we were kind of jamming, you know? I know that's a phrase you'd use in jazz, but we were kind of riffing on ideas about sound, and then how would you, a question that typically Jane might ask, oh, I really like that sound, yeah, yeah, how would I notate that? I love to encourage my students to play new music, and I have an ensemble, the clarinet ensemble. There's a mixture of those who are first year in college. Actually, there's even some younger and some advanced doing doctoral research. And I invited some great and dear artistic friends to write pieces for the ensemble, one of which is Jane. Jane knows the standard of the musicians, so they're students, some very good and some developing. And I haven't given her any instruction whatsoever, really, other than that. Say, go ahead and let's see what happens.
I was intrigued by the idea because it was something new to write for a large group of the same instrument, clarinets. I decided to write for six instruments, all normal B-flat clarinets and one bass clarinet, which is an octave lower, a bigger instrument, like a cello to a violin. And obviously, a clarinet is not my instrument, but I've worked with Paul so much that I know it very well. But I was also very aware that these are students and I wouldn't be asking too much from them, knowing that they'd be lovely players, but maybe not experienced in all kinds of strange techniques, which I would love. So I stuck to the usual kind of ways of playing, of course, demanding quite a bit, and part of the music is very free and asks them to not improvise, but to work within a certain framework. So when I'm starting to write, I still use the piano. That's where I start always, and pick out a few pitches. And I might just create a kind of pitch framework. And from there, I'll work the different lines and expand it and add more detail. So this idea becomes... I'm enjoying working with this material and the sound of six clarinets in my head. and I'm anticipating a lovely premiere with the Dublin Clarinet Ensemble. After a few years in Dublin, we returned to Galway, and I had to think about the musical situation living in Galway and access to live musical performance. So in 1981, a group of us started what is now known as Music for Galway, and it has become quite a large organization, very professional. But in the early days, there were a lot of us volunteers who just simply decided we needed to have regular concerts and performances. We felt we'd really like to have permanent musicians living in the city. We created a position for an ensemble in residence who would live in Galway, and the winners of the selection process were Contempo Quartet.
I'm Adrian Manto, the founder and cellist of Contempo String Quartet, Galway Ensemble in Residence for over 20 years, and the RT Quartet in Residence between 2013 and 2019. Bogdan Chauffé is the leader of the quartet, and we have Ingrid Nicola on the second violin, Andrea Banciu on the viola, and myself on the cello. So our name, Contempo, from contemporary music.
My name is Bogdan Chauffé, and I play first violin in Contempo Quartet. Jane Leary, I don't think we can understand how important she is for the musical life in Galway. She has driven Music for Galway for many years, and then she loved this new project with the Galway Ensemble in Residence, and she was the mastermind behind this too.
For the past 20 years, we play each first Tuesday of each month free concert for Galway audiences, and we travel into the county not only for concerts but interacting with local communities. So the connection with the audience, I think that's something amazing, what this residency and what our quartet achieved.
It was great to have Contempo Quartet in Galway City, and I could call down to them and ask them, how would this sound, or could you try this for me? And we would just experiment, and I was pushing them in terms of what can you do with a string instrument, and they were keen to learn. It was also, I think, an interesting experience for them to be pushed by a composer, and they hadn't had that before.
Jane was mesmerized by the opening of Beethoven's Serioso String Quartet with a three notes motif. Tagadam, tagadam, pom 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 pom, tagadam, 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 and again, and again, and again.
I heard them playing this quite a number of times in different venues in Galway, and it just got into my head, their playing of it and the Beethoven music. And out of that came my own piece, The Passing Sound of Forever.
She met with us several times. Usually Jane likes very much working with the performers, trying things before committing to work and experimenting, and like a painter, no, doing some sketches, and then at one point everything comes together and starts to form a string quartet.
We don't understand how lucky we are to be able to ask questions directly to the composer. That is amazing. Whereas when we play Beethoven, Mozart, Haydn, or whatever, we just imagine what would they say, what would they think, how should we interpret their music. Whereas when you play a contemporary piece, you have the chance to be in touch with the living composer and ask questions and find out all the details that you can see and sometimes not see in the music.
People might not be aware, but I think the passing sound of Forever is the most performed Irish string quartet, I'd say, since the risings, but definitely 21st century.
My quartet was inspired by the music of Beethoven, but the title is from the poetry of Dermot Healy, The Passing Sound of Forever. This is from his collection, A Fool's Errand, where he was himself inspired by the flight of the barnacle geese between Greenland and the coast of Sligo, where his home was. This flight is so transient, and music is the same. It disappears and it leaves us. And yet we hold on to the memory of it.
The Fool's Errand. It's hard to step out of the echo of all that's happened and all that will. The winter nights that sent you to the gable to listen beyond the spit of salt, to hear the troubled chant of all who go the sky road, built by a wave that rode from a place where communication broke down, that sent this prayer of birds to brave the weather and reach our ears with the passing sound of forever.
I love the sea, and I love the fact that I live close enough to it that I can easily walk down to Salt Hill here in Galway, listen to the waves, look at the bay and the sea. The sea fascinates me. I think it's the mystery of it and the fact that it's always moving, but it's always there. It doesn't go away. And the way the light shines on it, every time you look at it, it looks different. It's a different color. It has different movement, a bit like a piece of music. I suppose that's the connection, that it's moving and changing but not changing and flowing. And I don't have an immediate musical reference point that I come away humming a tune, which I wouldn't do anyway, but it's more the atmosphere. There's also something about the idea of the layers, the hidden layers below the surface. There's such mystery about what lies below the surface. I like the way water, it gives you the idea that you're being carried along gently. And when I do think of music, I think I like that it would carry the listener in a steady flow. And as you're listening, you might just feel that you're drifting along on the waves. I've won a number of competitions over the years, and for me it's a very important way of getting the music out into the world and sharing it with a wider audience, and also meeting new performers. In 2020, I noticed a competition, and this was from the Kaleidoscope MuseArt organization in Florida for Bagatelles for Beethoven. A bagatelle is a short piece without a structure that's necessarily identifiable according to classical formalities. And Beethoven, in his later years, had written a couple of sets of bagatelles, in particular his late Opus 126. And they're a collection of pieces, all different lengths, and there's a great freedom. It's kind of like the composer decided, I'm not going to write a sonata, I'm not going to write a rondo or any of these things where you have to follow a pattern. I'm just going to do what I feel like doing. And there's a lot of freedom. They're completely different, each of them. In 2013, I had been listening to the Beethoven bagatelles and took his model of freedom, and I wrote 5 bagatelles for piano solo. So I saw this competition, Bagatelles for Beethoven. I said, this is brilliant. I will enter my 5 bagatelles, which were kind of inspired by Beethoven. And off you go, didn't I win? So what did I win? I won a performance by a pianist called Maria Sumareva. Unfortunately, I didn't get to go to a live performance because the live performance didn't happen. It was during the pandemic and everything ended up being streamed. But she gave a beautiful, sensitive performance of my piece. And her husband, Andrew Rosenblum, gave a performance of the Beethoven Opus 126 Bagatelles on this same streamed performance. And I very much admired his performance. We got to know each other over the Zoom conversations over many months. We felt a closeness musically. So it was a lovely surprise after that to hear from Andrew and Maria that they would like to have a piano duet for the two of them from me. And I immediately jumped at the idea because, first of all, I thought they were wonderful pianists. They were very sympathetic to my music and my musical thinking.
We set up an actual microphone this time, so hopefully the sound will be better.
Oh, fantastic. Would you be able to try that free section?
Sure,
we can try that. Pedal, the Maria's pedal down.
That's all we need, right? Just the pedal.
Yeah, awesome.
Just the your pedal, yeah.
All right.
And take your time. It's quite, like, atmospheric.
Mm-hmm.
Decided to go for two pianists at one piano rather than two pianists at two pianos because it's a more practical solution. But it's a very challenging combination. When you have two people at the instrument, you've got all kinds of problems. You know, how do they handle the instrument without bumping into each other?
Yeah, like around 13, it's overlapping a bit where you've got C sharp, D sharp, and then Andrew's coming up to do the D, E. But I think you can manage that.
I like to play around with the pedals and the strings and the keys. And you've got, what, four hands and 4 feet. And you're sometimes having to stand up to reach inside the piano. And there are all these considerations to think about as a composer to make it work.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jane.
We'll be in touch once we read through the second piece and then we'll schedule something together.
Ah, okay, well, it's a start and I hope it was helpful. Thanks.
Of course, yeah. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
When I was a graduate student at Princeton pursuing a PhD in composition, there were only 2 women in the group of students. And I wasn't terribly aware of this. But when I came to Ireland, I was perhaps quite conscious of the fact that I couldn't find any other women composers to talk to or compare notes because they just weren't here. Happily, I was elected to ACE Donna in 1981, and there were very few composers in the total group of artists, but it was 15 years before another woman composer was elected to ACE Donna, and now I think it's much more balanced.
I really love Jane's string quartets. Her textures and her kind of manipulation of color is always something that's hugely inspiring to me. And I think it's why we both connect in such a strong way, because we both write in similar textural and colorful kind of language. My name is Judith Ring and I'm a composer. I would have always known of Jane O'Leary since I started composing back in 1998 or so. I would have heard of her like during my master's course in Trinity College. And over the years, I basically followed her work. Jane has been a real supporter of my work and commissioned me to write a piece for the whole ensemble, whole Concord ensemble, called Within an Egg of Space. And this was for the ensemble plus electronics. She's very loyal to younger composers and a huge, huge support. And it's just been incredible to have her support me over the years. She basically will commission you again and again if she likes your work, which is huge because Concord will play the piece again and again as well. So you get a lot of exposure, and I think there's several of us who wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Jane and her support. I guess I started composing with a lot of male, you know, figureheads out there. You know, there's all these, you know, male composers all over the place. But when Jane came along, it was just showed me, like, gave me the kind of more confidence in myself to write music because I had her as a role model as a female composer and saw how strong her work was. And then, you know, obviously I know other female composers' work as well, but it's just having such close contact with one of such an established level was very, very inspiring.
Please give a warm welcome to the Dublin Clarinet Ensemble and Paul Rowe.
Our first piece is by Jay O'Leary, who's here in the front row, and she's going to say a few words about the piece before we go.
Thank you, Paul, and it's been a great pleasure to write for this group, and thank you, Paul, for inviting me. It's a new experience for me.
Jane wrote a sketch, probably about less than 2 minutes anyway. I brought it to the group of students, my clarinet students, and we tried it out. Now, they wouldn't have played this sort of music before, by which I mean, first of all, the music on the page looks quite different to mainstream classical music. So we do have to talk a little bit about the scoring. And then the sounds that are produced, that Jane wants the students to produce, is quite different to what they would maybe normally be doing in their Brahms and their Mozart. And so in the first week, we tried it a few times, and then I recorded it, and I sent it to Jane. She was very happy about it. And then the next week, we did that, plus another sketch that Jane had written. So it was like she developed the sketch. It's been a delight. I think the students have really enjoyed it. They've really taken to the process of engaging with a composer like this, you know.
That was exciting. It's always wonderful to hear a premiere. It's a bit nerve-wracking too, because you never know quite what to expect. So I'm absolutely thrilled to have heard the Dublin Clarinet Ensemble premiere, my new piece, Footsteps Across Dublin. Fantastic performance from all those young musicians. Really encouraging and hopeful and lovely to see here in the beautiful concert hall at TU Dublin Conservatoire.
So we have about 5 minutes left on this meeting.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I see that. We do another one.
So let's do such a...
We might think...
Sorry. Oh, go ahead.
No, it's okay. No, you can let me know, but, you know, we just talk it through, like, and after a while, we think about possible performance.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Now I've gotten to the end of the piano duet that I'm writing for Maria Sumareva and Andrew Rosenblum in Chicago. And it's been a long process, a difficult challenge, and I'm delighted now to have three pieces which will together make one larger piece for the four hands at one piano and the 2 feet on the pedals. And I'm looking forward to hearing it in Chicago. After I've written the music, I usually find the title at that point, not at the beginning. I like to know what kind of sounds am I dealing with, what kind of atmosphere am I creating. And for this piece, I returned to the poetry of Dermot Healy, one of my favourite Irish poets. And it's the poem in the collection, The Reed Bed. I've given it the title, Among the Floating Trees, and that's a line from the poem, and then each of the three pieces has a word as its heading, rustling, sifting, whispering. And I've often used Dermot Healy's poetry, in particular this poem, The Reed Bed, I've used 3 times as the title to capture the atmosphere of the works I'm writing. The final lines of the poem refer to the viewer returning to see the reed bed, and he says, this is when they truly exist, when you come upon them at the last moment. And he says, you catch them nodding in their bed of cinnamon, getting ready in a flurry of whispering to leave you again. So that title, In a Flurry of Whispering, is so effervescent and fragile. I love that line, and I've used that for a title of a work which I wrote for Concord, and tries to show that shimmering quality in using strings with flute, clarinet, and also piano, myself on the piano, and capture that sparkling, effervescent quality. I'm really quite obsessed with this particular poem, and who knows, maybe I'll go back to it again.
The Reed Bed. So it is with the reeds. I pass them daily, but the minute I've gone by and the rustling stops somewhere behind me among the floating trees, they no longer exist. And then I start wondering, what is it I lost? What was that thing, that important thing I left behind me on the dreaming road? And then comes the moment when, returning home, I turn perchance their way, and there they are, the familiars I lost that morning, sifting by the dark tree that marks the edge of their watery bed, a tossed acre of amber reeds, feather-headed, frail, summoning. And this is when they truly exist, when you come upon them at the last moment, and the eye suddenly catches them nodding in their bed of cinnamon, getting ready in a flurry of whispering to leave you again.
Over the years, I've spent an awful lot of my time on boards and committees, on the Arts Council, on the National Concert Hall Board, the Contemporary Music Centre, and Music for Galway, and Galway Music Residency. And this is important to me, and I feel it's important to create a receptive environment for music, particularly interest in contemporary music. But now I've reached a very nice stage in life where I've stepped back from everything, and it's time for my music to be the focus. My time is spent at the piano, creating new pieces, finding audiences and performers for them, and enjoying hearing my music. And it's very interesting that a lot of my early works are getting performances. People from around the world are sort of coming and saying, ah, I want to play this piece. And it's fantastic.
Thank you.
In a Flurry of Whispering, composed by Jane O'Leary and performed by Concord Ensemble, bringing to a close The Musician That Is Me, a profile of Jane O'Leary. The Dublin Clarinet Ensemble, directed by Paul Rowe, premiered Jane O'Leary's new work Footsteps Across Dublin. The reader was Andrew Bennett, and our thanks to the Gallery Press for permission to include readings of Dermot Healy's poems A Fool's Errand and The Reed Bed. The producer of The Musician That Is Me is Claire Cunningham. Sound supervision was by Tin Pot Productions, and the programme was a Rockfinch production for RTE Lyric FM. And that programme is available to podcast on all the usual podcast platforms and on the RTE radio player. The Musician That Is Me was funded by Cumasúin na mBan and RTE's Independent Radio Productions Unit. The series producer is Owen O'Kelly. You can contact the programme by email features.lyricfm@rte.ie. Next week on The Lyric Feature sees the return of our now award-winning series, Feather and Flock, in which ecologist Anya Murray and folk musician Brian McGlynn discuss all things avian. And the featured bird next week is the skylark, that charismatic bird of open ground and uplands, widely celebrated for their impressive singing ability. That's Feather and Flock, Skylark, next Sunday here on The Lyric Feature at 6 p.m.
You're listening to The Lyric Feature on RTE Lyric FM.